We all think about what we eat. We plan our meals or count carbs or do any number of other things when it comes to what we put in our bodies. But do you ever think about the flavor of what you consume? Sure you do. What we eat or drink either tastes good or it doesn't. In fact, taste is the number one consideration in what we consume. Yet there is more to it than just like or dislike, and there's even a whole industry dedicated to it. Flavor is memory, flavor is feeling, flavor is science, flavor is art. Flavor is McCormick Flavor Solutions. I'm Randy Donovan, and welcome to our Flavor University podcast, where we explore the science, artistry, and industry behind flavor. Well, welcome back to Flavor University. I am Randy Donovan, and today we are jumping into one of the most powerful tools in flavor creation, which is gold standards. As we develop flavors, sometimes we ask ourselves, what are we aiming for when we are developing a product or a flavor? And gold standards is the answer to that question. They are the target, the prototype, the bullseye that we are shooting for. That flavor sets the bar for everything that follows, from nailing the perfect citrus flavor you might want in a citrus pop, or the perfect vanilla latte that you have a memory of sipping on in your favorite cafe that you had beachside on vacation. Gold standard is sort of that ideal flavor that you have in your head. So gold standards is what our team uses as a shared, undeniable reference point. And today, my guest is going to help explain and share how we get there. So, special guest, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience?
Sure. Thanks for having me. My name is Paul Hoffman. I'm a senior scientist with McCormick, and I've been focusing in on applications for flavors for the last 10 years. Prior to that, I have an education in food science and had some experience in kitchens prior to that.
And what can you tell me a little bit about kind of your day-to-day at McCormick?
Absolutely. So focusing in on a lot of different categories. So a big focus in savory, which includes pet care, which we can get into later, is that usually brings a lot of questions. And then also ice cream and frozen confections.
Awesome. Well, the frozen confections and ice cream sounds exciting to taste. I'm not sure how the pet food tasting goes.
So, luckily, I don't have to taste it. We can leave that one up to the herd of cats or dogs.
So let's start with the basics. What does a gold standard mean in the food industry?
Sure. So a gold standard is really a concrete thing that we can all taste together and form our opinions on. And it serves as a way to help filter out some of the noise that can be around the different names we have and the different conceptions we have of certain flavor names or profiles.
And do you know any history kind of where the term came from or how that became what we call it?
How it got from what it officially is to food, I'm not quite sure. But it originally was a monetary system. So it is a way of comparing all currencies back to each other with a standard in the middle so that it removes that noise from comparing currency to currency. And it all sits back to the relation to gold.
Okay, I love that. I had heard that before. I didn't know if it was a myth, so I was kind of fizzing you there. So kind of what would an example be that you use when you're describing a gold standard?
Yeah, so it can be anything. And I think that's the cool thing about gold standards and something that people can get confused about. So I always go back to, there are two examples that I use often, and one is barbecue. Barbecue is a massive term, and I grew up in Chicagoland, and barbecue to me was putting something on a grill and slathering some barbecue sauce on that. And people from Texas really don't like that.
Right.
And vocal about it. So, you know, every place has its own regional barbecue, and that's a huge category that really deserves some more specificity and some examples, because it can be really individualistic as to what barbecue means to someone. And I think another great example are chocolate chip cookies. I think everybody has their own conception. If I sat a bunch of people in a room and asked them to describe with such detail that we could taste it ourselves a chocolate chip cookie, I think we'd get a lot of different chocolate chip cookies, all of them valid, but different from each other.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. When you talked about, you know, barbecue. So I have lived in different parts of the country. I grew up on the East Coast. I've lived in Texas. I lived in Kansas City. You know, that regionality in flavors is such a huge aspect. And I would assume, you know, worldwide, that must play a huge factor as well. So can you speak to that at all about just globally? I'm sure that must come into effect as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's cultural differences. There are regional differences. So I think another example of, you know, of an international difference are curries. There are a lot of different curries out there. And it depends on the region they came from. And even within, you know, a country, you will still find massively different recipes from recipe to recipe. And I think another one we've just been talking a lot about recently is mole. I think mole is a really cool example of something that's so incredibly complex and so tied to family history, even of just a family recipe that has been passed down over generations, albeit, you know, a different in region background. There's a lot of different influences that can go into all of those nuances between something that fits within one category, but doesn't necessarily taste the same.
Yeah, that's so true. There's so much story that kind of goes into these flavors and feelings that are associated with these. So how then, when you're in the lab, how do you kind of peel away that and create these gold standards? Who kind of makes this happen?
Absolutely. I mean, it takes a whole crew of people. Gold standards really exist to help us with the sensory aspect of the differences between company to company, person to person. Even within the same company, there can be differences. So sensory is a huge part of it, as well as chefs and flavor creation are massively important to the process. They help kind of complete that research and that deep dive and figure out what is the authentic experience. And sometimes it's laid out for us from the customer or from who's asking for a profile, but it isn't always. Sometimes it's up to us to do that research and figure out what that scope is of all of the options and figure out where we want to land within that large category.
And all of what you just described, you know, to do the research and authentic experience and where to land, what are you doing? Are you tasting? Are you cooking? Are you mixing things up? What does it mean?
It can be a lot of different things. It just kind of depends on what it is and what we have access to. So sometimes it's going out and finding the best example that exists in restaurants or grocery stores. It's been defined for us as a certain profile and we can go find it. But sometimes it's not that accessible. And so that's where the really heavy research comes in and trial and error and finding tasting experiences with lots of people to help build an authenticity and agree that something is a good representation of what it's supposed to be.
So I have actually at McCormick and, you know, in the work that I do, I'm in marketing. So I have been on kind of in one of these group tastings where we were working on a cherry flavor. And so I think when you talk about that accessible and going to stores, that's kind of one of these instances. And in that case, we went and got a ton of different products. We tried ice cream and jams and juices, and we went to the regular grocery store and a Hispanic grocery store and an Asian and a Polish and, you know, tried all these different flavors. And we kind of came up with our quote unquote super flavor and compared, you know, oh, this was jammy, this was tart, this was fermented. And, you know, what we liked, what we didn't like. And so there was marketing, there was sensory, there was analytical, all these different people. And then I guess, can you explain, I was in there as a marketer saying, oh, this is good. And, oh, I think somebody would like this. What's the difference between you and I doing that? Kind of how do you represent the lab on a project like that?
Sure. So it's my job to figure out how to translate to the final product. There are a lot of different options in the things we taste. And you know, what we're doing together as a group is generating those descriptors, right? I always kind of think of it as a toolbox. So what is the toolbox that we have available to us? And what are we trying to achieve? And from there, I can help figure out how to translate those two things together and provide the customer, or even sometimes internally, provide them with the best possible option for them to move forward and achieve that profile that they're looking for.
That's awesome. I love how you said translate, because I think that's such an interesting part of what we do. There's so many different roles at McCormick and within flavoring. And really, we all do something different, but we really need these translators and these doers that bring things to life. So thank you for doing that.
Well, it takes the whole team. Every aspect of it's important, and having that expertise in different buckets is really what makes it work.
That's awesome. And so then how does it work with different sorts of applications, whether it's a drink or a gum or a frozen item? Can you talk a little bit about that and how, you know, the diversity of applications works and how things change?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, part of it is understanding the process that the flavor needs to go through and what that final base is. And, you know, as you spend time, you learn the different nuances of different bases. So I started off in microwave popcorn, which is super hard on flavor. It's not easy to achieve certain and complex profiles. Adding sweetness to the mix isn't easy. Things like to burn. So you have to understand what your limitations are in achieving those profiles and how you can flex the tools that you have to make them work in each individual base. And a lot of that's just research and development and plug and chug and see if it works. And you know, kind of building your experience from there, like anything having to do with cooking is.
That's so interesting. I think, you know, in the kitchen, and I've mentioned on the podcast before, I come from a culinary background in the kitchen. You know, I know that as I'm working with different things, that makes sense. But I don't think we always think of that when we're in the grocery store and buying a prepared product, those same things happen in the development of the product, that, you know, you are working with the same, you know, time and temperature and processing and, you know, different things work differently, or, you know, handle elements differently. So that's really interesting when you describe it that way, you know. Reasonably, of course, but hearing you say that, that's
it all starts in the same spot. It's just, you know, in when you're making the food at home, you don't have to go quite as many steps to make it, you know, stable on the shelf. So it all starts from the same place.
Yeah, that's really interesting part of it. That's great. So gold standards, kind of back to that gold standard part. As you're working with customers and as you are going through the development process and different products, you know, different items that you're creating, why is this such a big deal? Why is it so important?
Yeah. So, you know, we touched on a little already, but sensory is really tricky. And it very much is a little bit like speaking a foreign language, and everybody speaks it a little differently. And it's really important to build up a vocabulary together with people that you're working with. So you can kind of establish that what I'm calling barbecue is the same thing you're calling barbecue, and establishing that language and removing those gaps is a really important part of the collaborative part of this business. It's important to achieve the profile you're looking for and reduce some of that noise of the uncertainty.
That makes a lot of sense. And as you were saying that, I was kind of thinking about when you were saying, you know, build vocabulary to work together and sort of even that playing field. How do you deal with sort of that emotional part of feelings, though? Do gold standards, you know, somebody can say, but this isn't my grandmother's chocolate chip cookie. You know, how do you work that into the equation?
Absolutely. It's such a hard part of the job is being able to figure out where that subjectivity and that objectivity sit with each other, especially as it relates to tasting, which can be so emotional and nostalgia driven. So I think that's really a great purpose that gold standards serve, is it's not trying to be your grandmother's chocolate chip cookie. It is this chocolate chip cookie. And so it helps with removing some of that subjectivity that people have and that emotional link. That it kind of takes it away from being this, you know, imaginative thing that a chocolate chip cookie is, and it's a specific thing.
That makes a lot of sense, and I have to imagine that makes your day much easier.
Absolutely.
Right. And I would also imagine when you are working with a customer, if there is this cookie that they want to create, you can help them get there as well.
Absolutely. It's a really important piece to reducing, you know, submissions that don't live up to what someone's imagining. It can be hard to get in someone's head like that and understand exactly what they're thinking when they ask for something. So any chance we have to get some concrete insight into that, it's really important and helpful.
That's great. So when a customer comes to you with their specific needs, how do you help them? You know, if you have a gold standard on, you know, in column A, and then the customer's needs in column B, how do you bring those things together?
Yeah, absolutely. So it starts with a tasting, like we've talked a little bit about, and there's a lot of different pieces of that then go back and do their individual things, and we come back together. So, you know, tastings will often have marketing, analytical, some sort of culinary or applications people, as well as flavor creation involved. And from there, we sit and we understand what our desire is. Sometimes it will require analytical to go back and help us understand what's going on under the hood a little bit for some of the more complex profiles and how that can relate back to what we can actually do in a flavor creation setting. And then it's up to the flavorists to create, their magic sauce that we get to use all the time and go back and create that item that they're looking for. And then we can translate it in and work with marketing to make sure that we're filling the bucket that we're trying to.
That's when you said, what they what they're looking for and make their, kind of their magic. What are, if somebody says, I want this, we were talking about chocolate chip cookies, but let's switch to maybe back to barbecue. What if they say, I want this roasted flavor or grilled or smoked? Are these things that can be recreated? Because, they do have a different, somebody with a really nuanced palate knows that difference.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, we all have to understand too, that we're translating something. So it's never going to be an exact recreation, but there are a lot of different tools we have to kind of help bring that authenticity forward through different flavor creation techniques. And then there's also things, especially when you start to get into the more complex savory space for something like barbecue, it's where something like processed flavors can come in and really help lend that authenticity, where we're actually recreating some of those conditions. So, a great example in barbecue, like you touched on, like seared notes, things like that can be done through other means. But if you can actually recreate that Maillard reaction in a little pressure cooker, it can really lend an incredible fidelity of the flavor that you're looking for through that process and that recreation.
And so processed flavor, just to make sure I understand correctly, processed flavor and the Maillard reaction, and that's the browning, right?
Yes. Yep. So processed flavors is a big overarching category of flavor creation. Most often we're talking about things like the Maillard reaction, which takes just the combination of amino acids or reducing sugar and heat to create all kinds of incredible different compounds. And most oftentimes people think about it in a savory sense, but there's also different pathways that lead to things, sweeter brown notes, caramelization. While separate from the Maillard reaction is another one of those areas that people often think of in this category. So caramelization is a process as well as the Maillard reaction. So separate processes, but all fall under that kind of same category.
As you're talking and my brain's kind of going, when we first started, we were talking about gold standards and how they give us this authenticity in flavors. And as you're talking about recreating these processes, I just kind of blown away because, wow, talk about giving people authenticity. We're not just, sometimes I think when we hear flavors, we're thinking of, just this eyedropper of flavor that goes into whatever. But, we're recreating cooking processes. And, this is amazing and beautiful and giving something, really special to these gold standards.
Yeah, I think it's one of those areas where, oftentimes those things can't really be recreated in, like we talked about, in a shelf-stable format or, through other means. So where those processes break down is where flavor can come in and try and help bring back some of those notes and kind of redrive that authenticity that they're looking for. Everybody knows that something cooked at home is going to taste a little bit different than a market product. And it's where we can help translate and close that gap.
Do you have any great personal gold standard stories or projects you've worked on?
You know, I think there have been a lot over the years, and I think one of the more interesting ones most recently was something that I don't think I ever would have been exposed to otherwise. And it's a type of mushroom that comes from Haiti and is a popular dish in Haiti, where you take these mushrooms, I believe they're called janjan mushrooms, and you soak them. They come in a dried format, you soak them, and then you don't actually always use the actual mushrooms. You use that liquid you've created to make a rice dish, and it creates this very interesting umami savory complex that I really don't think I would have experienced otherwise. And then I've also just gotten some incredible recipes over the years from people sharing, you know, something that we were passionate about or was, you know, a family recipe, and that's been a really cool way to get some other experiences and an honor, you know, for people to be willing to share that kind of thing.
Oh my gosh, I don't know if you could hear when you said family recipes. I actually just gasped. That's amazing. I honestly, I didn't even really think about getting to be a part of that for so many people and customers and that process, that part of it. That's amazing. That's beautiful. As we were talking about customers and golden, you know, gold standards, what about, this is something we sometimes talk about, what about the golden tongue phenomenon? What can you tell us about that?
Sure. I think I feel comfortable saying that I don't think there really is such a thing as a golden tongue, but I think they exist.
For our listeners that don't know what it is, can you tell us what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So a golden tongue is a person who has a really strong preconceived notion of what something should taste like, and oftentimes has a lot of bias coming into those sorts of tastings. So they've kind of already established that they know what they're looking for, and oftentimes they come in feeling doubtful that what they're about to taste is going to meet up with that expectation.
Yes. And when I first started, I wasn't familiar with the term. And so I thought it meant a super taster or somebody who was this, you know, like a sommelier of wines who knew everything about them. And I guess some of them think they are that. I guess with the gold standard, we have to beware of them if they think they hold the key to the whole thing. So
absolutely.
So as you are working on the gold standard or with a gold standard and the customer is, you know, working on the development and, you know, the ideation of their product, how does the gold standard that they have in mind or that you help them create help solve problems with their process?
Absolutely. So, you know, a gold standard really serves to help us understand more deeply what they're looking for. And from there, it lends a much better first submission is kind of the way I'd think about it. So that first submission being much closer to their desired goal. You know, another example, just to stop harping on chocolate chip cookies and barbecue, but even within things like citrus, right? So a lime, for example, you know, that can be juicy, that can be peely and rindy, that can be candied profile. There are a lot of different nuances even within something as simple as a lime. And so providing gold standard can really help us understand which aspect of it that you're looking for and how our capabilities, you know, flavor capabilities can translate into that thing you're looking for, all measured up with what's possible within the application.
That's great information and great way to explain that. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm still going to ask, is there a gold standard for every flavor that we have, or are a lot of flavors just sort of, are gold standards just for sort of more popular flavors or kind of on an as-needed basis?
I think there can be a gold standard for anything. I don't think there is a gold standard that exists within that scope, right? I think, you know, we've been talking so much and so much of food is experiential and historical and emotional. And there are so many different aspects and such complexity that goes into creating dishes. I mean, just going to restaurants, you experience it all the time. So, you know, I think a gold standard is whatever the person who's working on it is asking for it to be, to an extent. So, and I think that's the importance of gold standards right there. Is that it's establishing right here, right now, this is the thing. And I don't think it's trying to say that this is necessarily the best example of the thing. It is the example we're working towards.
That makes great sense. And I also like that it sort of levels things. The gold standard is a funny thing because it's objective and subjective kind of at the same time. So
yeah, I think it's how do we, what is the best of both of those worlds, right? So I think the impetus for the gold standard, it sits in that subjective space. But once that's been established, that's where the objectivity comes in, and it's something for us to work against without kind of feeling like you're throwing at a dartboard a little blind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I guess as we kind of near the end here, what are some key takeaways that you have for our listeners today about gold standards or the process of working with them or toward them or just your own feelings?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of my many soapboxes. So gold standards, you know, I think from a very top level, they're a really important way to help translate when you're working with folks you don't normally taste with. I think it's a really important tool to ground sensory language quickly and efficiently. And I think that it's a great way to have a more collaborative effort on projects as well, especially when you're working with outside vendors and things like that. I think another key takeaway is that gold standards, while it sounds like it's something that's so grounded in exacting nature, the impetus for them isn't necessarily. So, you know, a gold standard can look like a lot of things. You can tell me to go to the grocery store and get a product, and that's the standard. You can send me a recipe. You can send me, you know, towards a restaurant. There isn't a gold standard of what gold standards should look like. And I think it's important for people to understand that any bit of that information that you can provide helps close that gap for that first submission and just will really help speed up the process and remove some of that uncertainty that exists.
You just mentioned sensory language. Those were great recaps, but there was what you mentioned sensory language. And what does that mean to you as we're talking about gold standards?
Sure. So, you know, sensory is tricky is where I'm always going to start. And it's language about describing food. It's easy to kind of go through life and say, that's good or that's salty. But sometimes we need to get much deeper than that. And that can be really hard. And it can be scary, too. It can be hard to be in a group and feel like you might say something wrong. And you're not wrong. It's just that somebody's descriptor might be slightly different than yours. So this really serves as a tool to help ground that. So, you know, oh, this is smoky and this is why it's smoky and this is how it's smoky is kind of where a gold standard can step in and help remove some of that uncertainty and that much more personal aspect of sensory.
Well, Paul, you were fantastic. I thought I came into this having a pretty good idea of gold standards and why they were important, but this really gave me a bigger and better understanding of how in the lab, how much they help you and everybody on your team with what you do. So that is, I was looking at it from, this is the best raspberry or this is the best cherry and just sort of that enjoyment facet of it. But I can see in creating and development how important it is for you and working with customers, just the efficiency and the collaboration that it must make things just smoother and truly probably more enjoyable to.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said it was just, you know, a necessary part of the job. It's a really cool aspect of the things we get to play with in the food industry and absolutely one of the highlights of my job when I get a gold standard and I either get to go taste something I haven't tasted before or find a new recipe. You know, there is that aspect of it that is absolutely makes things, you know, more enjoyable, but it also serves a really important purpose.
That's wonderful. That is so great. And I love hearing that part, that excitement and enjoyment part of your story and you know, just truly your passion for what you do. That's the best part of what we all get to do together. So I always end with a question and sometimes it's related and sometimes it's random, but this just lines up perfectly. What is, we were talking about the emotions and family recipes. What is a family gold standard that is closest to your heart and kind of meaningful to you? That's my question for you.
That's a great question. I think for me, it kind of all goes back to comfort food is kind of where I sit. And you know, my mom it was really good at stews. So I kind of have a gold standard of what a beef stew should look like based on hers. And, you know, as I've gone on in my years, I don't know that I've ever really experienced anything quite the same as her beef stew. But so, yeah, I think for me personally, that's one of those areas where, you know, I think of my gold standard maybe differing from others. And it's something that, you know, is a cool piece of just kind of growing up and as I've developed as someone who cooks a lot, how I can recreate her gold standard, because she's not the best with recipes. It's all kind of off of her hands and done over the stove. So getting a written record isn't always the easiest.
Right. Oh my goodness. And what's in her stew? I have to know.
So, you know, it's a really simple composition. I think that's what I love about it so much. But starting off with the way she sears the beef in big chunks using pearl onions and baby carrots, you know, I think there's just some of those things of just what was accessible to her and what was easy, you know, when she was raising kids. I think there's just this kind of like perfect makeup of identity to the stew.
Oh, that got me a little teary. My son was just home for fall break, and that was what I made one night, was a big pot of beef stew. So, and I'm sending your mom a big hug. Well, I love that. Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining us to learn more about gold standards and what makes them so important in our journey as we create flavors together and reach our goal in developing products. And I invite all of you to consider your own gold standards in your favorite products, whether they are on the shelf in the grocery store, your favorite restaurant, or in your kitchen, and your family's favorite recipes. Gold standards really are that identifying flavor. Sometimes it's the best of the best. Sometimes it's just that special nostalgia that you remember. But, you know, they hold a special place, oftentimes in our heart, but definitely they're that bar that we are trying to reach as we create something. And for our customers, we're always here to help make it happen as we help you get there. So thank you for being with us, and we look forward to our next podcast together. Thanks for being here, Paul.
Thanks for having me.